I'm Marco Werman, and this is The World, a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH Boston. Accountability, it's a central idea in the debate over Syria. President Obama says the Syrian government must be punished for using chemical weapons. He wants to hold President Bashar al-Assad accountable for a chemical attack last month that U.S. officials say killed more than 1,400 people. But what about President Assad himself? Why isn't he under investigation by, say, the International Criminal Court in The Hague? We pose that question to Rebecca Hamilton. She's the author of Fighting for Darfur, and she also teaches at Columbia Law School.
So the International Criminal Court actually doesn't have the authority to go in and do anything in Syria right now because Syria hasn't joined that court, just like the US has not joined that court. There is, however, one way in which the court could go in and prosecute Assad, and that would be in the worst cases where atrocious crimes are committed that are of real threat to international peace and security, then working under the UN Charter, the UN Security Council can still give the court the authority to go in there.
I mean, it seems like Syria would kind of fit into that definition.
Yes, I think that's absolutely right. I think if you look from a legal standpoint, this would be exactly the sort of case that the ICC was set up to prosecute. The trouble is you have a huge political split on the UN Security Council right now, and Russia is saying that it would veto any resolution to refer the Syria situation to the ICC.
So Russia and China seem to have stood in the way of military action and taking that seriously. What would it take to bring Russia and China to reconsider some kind of legal action against Assad?
You know, it's not clear right now. I think what we've seen based on sort of past incidents is that sometimes when there's enough pressure globally on the Security Council to do something, they decide to make a referral to the ICC because it's sort of the easiest policy option for the Security Council. They can delegate responsibility to the ICC and then say to the world, we did actually do something. The other way would be if you really had international consensus that what the Assad regime did on August 21 with the use of chemical weapons against civilians really did violate a global norm.
Why do you think the White House has not gone that route?
I think there's two reasons. Firstly, you know, the clear Russian position has been, no, we're not going to go there. The other reason, and you saw this in Ambassador Powell's speech on the issue last week, was they are arguing that, well, a legal process takes such a long time and it won't deter Assad immediately. Now, that is certainly true, but it's not simply about deterring Assad or anyone else in Syria who has access to chemical weapons. It's also about deterring people in the future who get access to chemical weapons. The key here is that there's not one policy option that is going to solve this. Amongst the legal, the diplomatic, and the military, you need to have those three strands all working in the same direction.
All we're hearing about is the military option. Why is that the only one that's really being discussed?
To be perfectly honest, I think the large part of the justification is to protect U.S. credibility. You had President Obama saying this is a red line. If you cross it, there will be consequences. The Assad regime crossed that red line. They called our bluff on that. And there is no, you know, magic door number two that you can go through. There is no silver bullet here. And a unilateral military strike is sort of the easiest, quickest option that they have in the toolkit to say that.
You're so identified with your work on Darfur, Rebecca Hamilton. How does Syria strike you as different from Darfur or any crisis where there's atrocity and the possibility of some kind of intervention?
Right now, the international game that we're seeing playing out on Syria strikes me as incredibly similar to what we saw in Darfur in 2006, 2007, 2008. Of course, it's a completely different local conflict. What is the same is the suffering of civilians. But what is also the same is a divided international community. You have the US out in front saying there are atrocities that are happening, and you have the rest of the international community not fully in lockstep behind the US. And the lesson that we got from Darfur and our failure to resolve the situation there was that when you have these regimes that are committing atrocious crimes against their people, having simply the US standing up against them is not good enough in the world that we're living in today. You need a unified international community to stand up to these regimes.
Your generation has been influenced by the moral force of people like Samantha Power when it comes to brutal episodes like Syria. I'm just curious how you feel when you hear the passionate arguments for intervention coming from those quarters.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I think there's been something of a generational shift, which is you really did have the U.S. as the sole superpower. And if the U.S. led, then everybody else would follow. What we've seen since then with my generation coming along is that international power has fragmented.
Doesn't that kind of make Syria the first and possibly the last chance test case for what the U.S. role in the world might be?
Syria is an enormous test case for what the U.S. can and needs to do in the 21st century to stop these egregious crimes against civilians.
Rebecca Hamilton, who teaches at Columbia Law School, she's also the author of Fighting for Darfur. Rebecca, thanks very much.
Thank you.